Hello and welcome, this is Dr. Andrew Jones, and welcome to our brand new podcast called Veterinary Secrets. This podcast is all about showing you how to treat your pet at home with natural, safe, and effective veterinary home remedies. You're going to learn how to save money on veterinary fees, what's new in holistic veterinary care, plus how you can provide veterinary care for your pet at home. So who am I? For those of you who don't know me, my name, Dr. Andrew Jones. I'm a former practicing veterinarian and now a natural pet health advocate. I have a brand new book called Veterinary Secrets. It's available on Amazon. I've authored numerous digital books and reports. I have over 50 pet health videos, an online dog and cat health membership site, a complete natural dog supplement, a complete natural cat health supplement, and I'm active in social media on my blog, The Internet Pet Vet, on Facebook, theonlinevet.com, on Twitter and Pinterest. So welcome and thanks for joining me. So in today's episode and throughout the courses of these episodes of Veterinary Secrets, I'm going to be podcasting once a week. We're going to sort of cover a fairly regular format where I'm going to start out with a particular disease in general. And in today's episode, we're going to start it with allergies and dog allergies. What are they? The common ones, the common causes, and the lesser known but effective home remedies. I'm going to cover a topic in the news. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the dog walker in British Columbia that was recently charged. Then lastly, I'm going to conclude with a question from one of you, the listeners. And in particular, so if you have a question, you can send in those questions to podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. And once a week, I'm going to be answering your listener questions. So once again, thanks for joining me, and let's get right into the episode. You know, dog allergies, what are they? What are the more common ones, the common causes? And the lesser known but effective home remedies. I think any of you, if you've got an allergic pet or have a good understanding of allergies themselves, I mean, they show up as these signs of all this excessive itching, scratching, paw licking, can be anal licking. We're going to see it as hair loss throughout the house. They can start at very young ages. I was just this morning talking to a former client who had a puppy starting out at the young age of 3 months of age with this scratching. And I think all of us are aware of allergies. In our pets, they're showing up as skin-related disorders and the scratching. Whereas in us, in people, we're seeing as more respiratory signs. You know, we have the weepy, the runny nose, the sneezing, the weepy eyes. As far as what are the cause of the allergies, I mean, there are just numerous potential causes. Think about food and the whole variety of things in food. In particular, when we're thinking about our dogs, we're more concerned about what is the actual protein source. For instance, looking at the carbohydrates as a potential source of the allergens themselves, the dairy products. We're thinking about our cats in particular. They seem to be more allergic to the dairy in particular. The second most common would be the protein, such as the fish. But then there's the grasses, all those sorts of pollens. There's the house dust mites. There literally are hundreds of allergens. And I have a dog, an older dog called Jesse, who's got this sort of chronic ongoing allergy where I'll see it up with him chronically licking his groin, especially at night. And what's happened, it'll get red, and then secondary redness, he'll also get secondary black and thickening of the skin. I personally feel bad for him, and I can imagine with you as a dog owner, if you're dealing with a dog that has an allergy, you sort of feel helpless. I mean, there must be more that you can do than just going to your veterinarian, giving prednisone, and hoping that the itching stops. First, yeah, there is. There are many things that you can do. And I think many people really overlook these whole variety of, you know, natural home remedies. Or at least they discount them, or they don't do things in a sequential order. So the first thing, I'm going to put on my veterinary hat and talk about the food and the food itself. You first need to have done a proper hypoallergenic food trial. So that means like feeding your dog a particular food that we know they're not allergic to for a minimum of 12 weeks. And while you're doing that, you want to make sure to start out with a unique protein. So protein that they've never had before. So for instance, one of the favorite ones I had in veterinary practice was fish and sweet potato. Because I know most dogs have never eaten fish. Seldom have they ever had sweet potato as a carbohydrate source. And Wellness made one, which I quite liked. I had lots of dogs respond well to it. There's a whole variety of veterinary and non-veterinary type hypoallergenic type foods. You can also make one yourself. But the big point here is we're trying to minimize a really simple protein source your dog has never had, a simple to minimal carbohydrate source, something your dog has never had, and just feeding that food and that food alone for a minimum of ideally 12 weeks. For most dogs, you're gonna start to see an improvement in 6 weeks. If you can stick with it for a month and a half, in most cases, you're gonna know. Some breeds and some of the dogs that have serious allergies take longer. I mean, I've seen some of the labs take a bit longer, up to 12 weeks. But encourage you to do that first. You know, going to a simple, more natural type food with minimal ingredients, avoiding artificial colors, flavors, and preservatives. Secondly, look at adequate parasite control. We want to make sure that your dog's not dealing with fleas as a problem as well too. Good common sense stuff, but you need to sort of minimize, get rid of all the other potential source things that are going to cause your dog to start itching and scratching. So making sure that there is adequate flea control. You can look at a more natural type flea spray, one that has cedarwood oil. I found they work very well. And then you can also look at using some type of safe holistic powder. There's a natural product called borax. You can put it in your cracks and crevices in your house. You can also just lightly sprinkle your dog with borax. Two great ways to deal with sort of natural flea control. So now we know that we're not dealing with the food allergy, we're not dealing with fleas, then we can start to look at some of these additional home remedies. First, just don't overlook the whole point of regular bathing. So what we're trying to do is have a better understanding now, for the majority of cases of dogs that do have allergies, it's not that they're reacting to what they're inhaling. It's in particular, it's these allergens, these proteins that are actually on the surface of your dog's skin. And from there, I mean, they're binding with things called cells called histamines, these mast cells that release a product called histamine, and by doing so, that is causing all the itching. So we know we really have to deal with what's topically landing on your dog. So bathing, it's a super inexpensive, easy thing to do, and the more often, more regular that we're bathing your dog, the less allergens they're going to have on their skin, less likely they're going to be react. As an example, if they're walking outside, their paws are walking in the grass, when they come inside, wipe their paws. Really easy way to deal with a dog that's got atopy, which is another way of saying what we used to call this topical allergy or inhalant allergy. You can also look at doing with my own dog, Jesse. I give him an oatmeal shampoo weekly, and I follow that up with a basic conditioner. Responds great. Next thing, a more not necessarily natural, but an over-the-counter product that many of you has probably used are antihistamines. There are natural antihistamines, there's conventional ones. I've used Benadryl for big flare-ups on my dog's skin, for instance. I don't give him the dose of 0.5 milligrams per pound. So as an example, I will give Jesse, who's a 50-pound dog, I'll give him 25 milligrams of Benadryl. I'll typically give that at night, once a day. You can give that up to twice a day if you need to. Lately, I've been trying to add in vitamin C, which also has antihistamine-type qualities. And I'm dosing him at a vitamin C dose of about 50 milligrams per 10 pounds twice daily. So based on Jesse's weight, he's getting about 250 milligrams of vitamin C twice daily. Those in combination seem to be keeping those allergies under control. Next, essential fatty acids. You know, every single dog that has any type of allergy needs to be on a high enough dose and a high level of these EFAs, these essential fatty acids. Of all the variety of things that you're going to hear about and then we talk about, these need to be sort of one of the basis of them. The big point in that I find in general with talking with many of the pet owners is you're not giving a high enough dose long enough. So the omega-3 dose needs to be 1,000 milligrams per 10 pounds daily. And an inexpensive way to give this is with flax oil. And this works out to be giving 1 tablespoon of flax oil per 50 pounds daily to your dog. Easy, easy, inexpensive thing to do. And if you haven't given it, you need to be starting on that, but on a high enough dose long enough. A couple more things I want to mention, and we're going to revisit allergies in upcoming episodes. It's sort of one of the more common reasons our dogs are brought into veterinary practice in the first place. But I wanted to start out with, you know, one of the more pressing listener questions. So the next thing I want to talk about are probiotics. They're increasingly being used for dogs with allergies. You know, these beneficial bacteria play a role in normalizing the overactive immune system. You're not necessarily going to see an instant response, but you may see some marked decrease in the allergic signs after using the probiotics for 4 weeks. You need to use them for 4 weeks. You can dose lactobacillus, so that's the most common probiotic, at a quarter of a capsule per 10 pounds of body weight twice daily. And then the last ingredient I want to discuss is a supplement called colostrum. Research has found there's an ingredient in colostrum called praline-rich polypeptide, PRP, in cow colostrum. And it appears is what is helping decrease the allergic symptoms, the itching, the scratching. The colostrum dose for dogs with allergies varies based on the company. In general, I'm equating it to our human doses. So I advise giving a quarter of the human dose for 20 pounds daily. So, you know, if you do have an allergic dog, don't despair. You know, there are a number of things you can do as opposed to just seeing your veterinarian, just being on the prednisone. You may need to still be on that conventional medication during these serious flare-ups. But if you look at adding in some of these nutraceuticals, some of the other suggestions that I discussed, you're potentially able to decrease the dose of that steroid. And then some dogs get them right off of it. You know, you can really be systematic about it. I encourage you to do an adequate food trial to start. Make sure your dog is not dealing with any external parasites such as fleas. And then, you know, be concerted and focused and make sure they get on these adequate supplements. If your dog is not on a high enough level of EFAs, get them on those EFAs. So our next topic I want to discuss is something a little bit more serious. And what was in the news recently? So last week in British Columbia, there's a dog walker by the name of Emma Paulson, who about 6 months ago in the summer, she was walking dogs and she claimed that someone had stolen this dog. She had six dogs in the back of her vehicle. She claimed that the dogs were stolen. There was a huge deal of news about this. She had many chances to recount and to at very least come clean with her story. So she played along with the media, had, you know, family members were out looking for their dogs. And then there was some sort of holes in her story. The police pressed further till she actually owned up to saying that, well, actually what happened is the dogs died in the back of her vehicle. She was in a store for a period of time. The dogs were left in the back of this vehicle with obviously the windows completely tight, and they all died of heat stroke. She came back, found them dead, dumped them in a ditch. That was months ago. I mean, it's a horrible news item, a horrible story. But not only did this all happen, she was charged by the police, charged by the SPCA. She pled guilty, but she never once apologized to any of the single family of these family members. Can you imagine, you know, losing your dog to a dog walker? Not only that, like this sort of tragedy, and they don't even apologize to you. You know, secondly, throughout that whole period of time, she lied. I mean, yes, this happened, and then secondly, she lies. Rightfully so, she's charged. So not only is she charged, she's now, one, required to spend 6 months in jail, and secondly, she's essentially banned from obviously operating any type of animal business, even in particular, not being able to own dogs. Rightfully so. I mean, in some ways, to me, it still feels she's getting off easy, and I just can't believe that there should be obviously some form of regulation around dog walkers, period. And I think in some areas there are. In general, I mean, it's a fairly loose business. If you want to be a dog walker, you can put up your sign and you can start dog walking. And, you know, I just feel sorry for those people and what happened, and unfortunately, you know, their animals can never come back. But at least, I mean, if they can take heart in anything, at least knowing that, you know, this Emma Paulson was charged and, you know, the judge looked upon it as something very serious. Maybe even 2 years ago, this wouldn't have happened, that she's gone to jail and gone for jail time. And then if I conclude on one last thing, is if you have a dog walker, you know, just really do your due diligence. You know, obviously ask neighbors, ask friends who have dogs, where do they take their dog to, but check in on them. Just make sure they're very responsible, because the last thing you want is that you've entrusted your dog's care to some other person and they're irresponsible about it. Then our last segment of our podcast is listener question. And this comes from a client who emailed in. And the question was that my veterinarian says that for my cat with urinary tract disease, I should only feed this special veterinary dry kibble. What do you think, Dr. Jones? What do I think? Great question. So years ago in practice, especially when I first started, you know, that's what I did. I mean, I would talk to clients and I would say, you need, because that's what I was educated, or in particular with the drug reps or the food reps, I was told that, yep, get your, this cat has been diagnosed, for instance, it's been diagnosed with struvite crystals, struvite urolithiasis, get them on this special veterinary diet, which is going to make the urine more acidic. By making the urine more acidic, we're going to get rid of the struvite crystals. Now we realize a couple big things. One, we know that our cats should not be on dry food, period. Ideally, if you've got a cat, and I'm trying to transition my own cat onto this as well too, they should be on much more of a, preferably no dry kibble at all. ideally just on canned food, more natural type diet, which is what they would normally get if they were hunting. They get most of their moisture from eating that canned food, whereas in the dry stuff, they need to drink, which is not what cats normally do. I mean, that's not historically, that's not what came from nature. I mean, they were animals which would hunt. They would hunt birds. They would get their moisture from their prey. They're not getting that now. So going back to the question was, should I be feeding this veterinary dry kibble? Definitely not. There are specific veterinary diets, and they're now canned, and there can be particular formulated to help deal with things such as struvite crystals. Because what we do know now is we want to make the urine pH fairly balanced. We don't want it too acidic. We don't want it too alkaline. We want it somewhere in between. And that's what would happen if you've got a cat that's hunting and he's eating primary protein, and that's what our cats are. They're obligate carnivores. First, he's getting all this additional moisture. By getting the additional moisture via your prey that you're hunting or via that canned food that you're choosing to feed, that additional moisture is going into your cat, going right through into his bladder. It's flushing out whatever's into his bladder. So if he has crystals in his bladder, it's flushing those crystals out. And by just the process of flushing and dilution, that goes as much as sort of solving that problem as anything else. Makes huge sense. And if you think about it, I'm just amazed that for all those years, especially when I started in veterinary practice, I sent so many cat owners and so many clients home just on this dry-only food, thinking, one, it was good for their teeth. Two, it's going to be potentially supposed to help their urinary tract problems. And if anything, it might have even made it worse. The second point around sort of urinary tract disease and dealing with kibble or types of food-wise is that we also know that for majority of cats that have urinary tract disease, it's not caused by an infection as much as it is caused by sort of these whole variety of environmental stressors. And then what's happening to these cats is it's showing up as real inflammation. The lining of the bladder wall is getting thick, red, inflamed, and it's painful. And then it's showing up as the blood in the urine, maybe the straining to the urinate, the frequent urination, all those sort of hosts of signs and symptoms that you'd expect from urinary tract disease. So what are some of the other sort of natural treatments for that? Obviously, one, improving your cat's environment, you know, taking the stress, making it less stressful. In many cats, we had these indoor cats, simple act, and if it's possible of them being able to go outside, dramatically decrease their stress. Urinary tract infection went away. A couple other things I want to mention sort of as a last to follow up with this listener question in particular is one, look again. So one, you want your cat just on a canned food only, preferably primary protein canned food. You can use a veterinary one, but you can also just get a more natural type food from a pet supply store. The second thing, make sure we want to decrease the stressors in their life. So if you've got two cats, make sure they have their own separate litter box. They have privacy around their litter box itself. If you've got an indoor cat and he's looking at other cats outside, that's causing him more stress. You know, pull the blinds. Restrict his view from this other cat. You want to decrease the stress in their life. Three, you can look at adding in some form of supplement that can help decrease the inflammation that's in that bladder. Two in particular are glucosamine and chondroitin. They're now available in a variety of different cat supplements. The big point is you want to make sure that you're giving 100 milligrams daily of glucosamine, a minimum of 50 milligrams daily of chondroitin. Those two supplements in particular seem to be the ones most beneficial for decreasing bladder wall inflammation. Those are the three big things I want you to focus on. And lastly, in conclusion, don't just feed the dry kibble. Wow. So thank you. Thank you all for listening for the first episode of Veterinary Secrets. I hope you enjoy it. I'm hoping you're going to find it useful. And I hope you subscribe. We're going to be publishing these regularly, so once a week. Our goal is to get them up every Monday, but early in the week I want to start the week with some really good information to be able to communicate with you and answer some of your questions, and I think give you some good useful information. If you find this information helpful, I'd love to hear from you. You can send us in an email. It's at podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. If you have any questions, you can submit questions to the same thing. It's podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. So thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Andrew Jones, and I look forward to talking to you again next week.